Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
As you all know, hiring is challenging. It's hard to find good help these days, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. Let me tell you about Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz. He experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. Smells good. But then he switched to ZipRecruiter, and he saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up right now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. How about that? And its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. So you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan said he was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying and found his new director of coffee in just a few days. How about that? With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes right now. If you go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMA, again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA, you can try for free the power, the magic, the brilliance of ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/MMA. Back in your life on this Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Hope you're doing well on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm in New York City, our beautiful Seaport Studios, and I am very excited about today's show. I can't wait. First up, we're going to have, in my opinion, the face of ESPN. He's the star of First Take. He appears almost 24 hours a day on this network. Jack of all trades. Tremendous guy, Mensch, has gone out of his way multiple times since I got here around 2 years ago to make me feel welcome and comfortable, offer great support, a great teammate, a great colleague. The one and only Stephen A. Smith is going to be joining me on today's podcast. Yes, Stephen A. himself. And of course, he's been in the news as of late, the stuff with Joe Rogan, his commentary post UFC 246. The MMA community saying that he doesn't know what he's talking about, he shouldn't be there, all that stuff and more. We'll get his side of the story. We'll also find out what the story is behind that video of him hitting mitts. You know that whole video? We'll get the story behind that one. Because I know a lot of you are curious about why he was hitting mitts like that and why it came out when it did, all that stuff and more. And so I really appreciate him doing this. Of course, this week, a horrible week for everyone involved with basketball, and he was a good friend of Kobe Bryant. He said on First Take on Monday that he was with him on New Year's Eve. And so I thought when we booked him that maybe he would want to postpone, but being the consummate pro that he is, he said, no way, I gave you my word, I will be there. And so in a matter of moments, we will talk to Stephen A. Smith about that controversy, if you will, surrounding his 246 commentary and the Joe Rogan stuff and the MMA community and being sort of an outsider coming in and talking about MMA when you are so established in other sports. So I'm really looking forward to that. We'll also be joined by New York Rick, who will offer some thoughts on the state of the heavyweight division after Curtis Blaydes' win and where we go from here with Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, of course, and Ngannou and Rozenstruik fighting in March as well. So we'll get his thoughts on that. Also some Super Bowl weekend thoughts, because for the longest time, Super Bowl weekend was a huge weekend for the UFC. Now there's no more events, but like for 14, 15 straight years, that was a marquee tentpole weekend for the UFC. So we'll get some thoughts and maybe even some thoughts on the late, great Kobe Bryant. We'll also check in with TST, get the minimalist tip of the week, all that stuff and more coming up on today's program. But before we get to New York Rick, let us get to the aforementioned Stephen A. Smith, a man who needs no introduction. In my opinion, he is the face of ESPN, and not just my opinion, in many people's opinion. He he anchors this entire network. He is our leader here, and he's been doing a tremendous job for many, many years on First Take and a whole bunch of other shows, and a very busy guy. He's in Miami right now for the Super Bowl, so really kind of him to give us a few minutes of his time here on this Wednesday afternoon. Stephen A., thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Nario. How are you doing, man? How's everything?
I'm doing great. And first off, I just want to send my condolences to you. I know how hard of a week this has been. I know how close you were with Kobe Bryant, and I know how probably mentally and emotionally and physically exhausted you are right now. So for you to give us some time on this week in particular really means a lot. And I just wanted to say I'm really sorry for what happened. It's still hard to come to terms with, at least for me, and I didn't even know him.
I appreciate that, man. It's been a real rough week. He was a good dude. He had his things about him, no question, but he was a great champion, and he worked his tail off, and he was committed to excellence. And, you know, his post-career was on the verge of being better than his playing career, and he was really excited about that, excited about his daughter and what her potential was. And for him to pass away was bad in and of itself. For it to be in a helicopter crash is just absolutely horrific, considering the fact that, you know, he was in a helicopter as much as we're in cars. And but then for him to lose his 13-year-old daughter as well, it doesn't get much more tragic than that. So my heart goes out to his family, his wife, his three remaining daughters, and all the loved ones that he had out there. It's just it's pretty devastating, to say the least.
Amen. It's hard to transition from that, but we will do our best. Obviously, yeah. You have been in the news as far as MMA is concerned, and I'm wondering. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're no stranger to people reacting to the things that you say. This is part of your job, and I think that you do a phenomenal job of that, and you have assumed that responsibility. But considering the brief appearances that you made at UFC 246 post fight on SportsCenter on the post fight show. Were you surprised at all at the reaction to the things that you were saying and did say by the MMA community, the fighters, the fans, everyone involved, the media as well?
Well, I ultimately was surprised by what Joe Rogan had to say. I certainly wasn't surprised by what, you know, fans and critics have. I mean, listen, I'm a polarizing figure. When I speak, you're going to have people that side with me and agree with me. You're going to have people who don't. Personally speaking, I don't give a damn. I say what I feel. I mean what I say, and it's based on what I witness. And so for me, when I'm you know, the fight game, like I've been covering boxing my entire career and have been following boxing since I was 3 years old. There are people who disagree with me about Triple G versus Canelo Alvarez. There's people who disagree with me when we talk about the possibility of Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford. There are people who have disagreed with me in the past, whether it was about Andre Ward versus Kovalev 1 or something along those lines. That comes with the territory. You understand that, and you go with it from there. As it pertains to the UFC, I'm certainly no aficionado. I leave it up to you and guys like Brett Okamoto and, you know, Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping and Daniel Cormier and a host of people that I've had the honor and privilege to work with. I know that you guys are the experts. You guys are the ones that cover the sport religiously. But to me, I wasn't covering UFC. When I was at UFC 246, I wasn't covering the UFC overall as the sport. I was there to talk about that fight, and I know what I'm watching. And so for me to look at Conor McGregor, to see three shoulder shrugs to the nose of Cowboy Cerrone, obviously, he broke his nose, beat up his face pretty well and what have you. Joe Rogan was of the mindset that Conor McGregor showed a lot. I respectfully disagree. Number one, I don't believe there's so much you can show in 40 seconds in most instances. Number two, what Joe Rogan doesn't know is I was speaking to a guy by the name of Ariel Helwani, who I'm talking to right now, who kept reminding me leading up to the fight, Cowboy Cerrone doesn't show up in big events. The lights get brighter. He kind of shrinks, Stephen A. Look out for that, Stephen A. Is that not what you kept telling me? That's exactly what you kept telling me leading up to that fight. And so for me, I watched the fight, and I'm like, my God, all you got off was one kick, which was blocked by Conor McGregor, and that's it? That's not going to cut it against Nurmagomedov. That's not going to cut it against Masvidal. My mentality is that when you're a champion or you're somebody that aspires to be the champion, whoever the measuring stick is at that particular moment in time is someone I'm fantasizing about you going up against. And so to me, what we saw from Conor McGregor that night showed us nothing about what he would potentially do in a rematch against Nurmagomedov. So to say something like that, to me, it's not sacrilegious. It's not a crime against the sport or anything like that. As an observer and a reporter on pugilistic sports, this is what I saw at UFC 246. If you want to disagree with me, you're the great Joe Rogan. I respect that. I'm honored that you took into account my opinion with what he's done for the sport. But to take it to the point where it wasn't a good look for me to be there, it wasn't a good look for ESPN to be there, I thought that was beyond the pale, and I thought that was excessive and unnecessary. I certainly have profound respect for him, what he means to the UFC and to MMA sports, what his cachet brings, who he is, and I have profound respect for him, and he was incredibly nice to me and all of that stuff, and I will continue to be respectful and very nice to him. I harbor no animosity or whatever. I just thought to disagree with me would be one thing. But to act like I didn't even belong at the event because I have an opinion that differs from yours, I thought that was a bit extreme and unfair.
So it seems like the part that has drawn the ire of Joe Rogan and the MMA community is this idea that Cowboy quit. This idea mm-hmm. that you can't talk about fighters in that light. Like, you could talk about, you know, the Spurs not showing up or the Chiefs not showing up, but fighters are different because of what they're doing and what they're putting on the line. Do you agree with that sentiment, or do you feel like you can talk about fighters that way, that it's all fair game, it's sports at the end of the day, and in your opinion, it's no different than the Lakers, the Cowboys, et cetera?
It's a mixture of both. I think that, I would say the same thing in all likelihood if I was in Joe Rogan's position, because especially when you're talking about fighters who have far more courage than you and I would ever have in terms of getting in that octagon or the squared circle of boxing and going out there and virtually putting their lives on the line, literally putting their lives on the line. You certainly don't, at the very least, you need to be extremely reluctant to go that route. But look at how I'm looking at Ariel. I'm watching the fight, right? And I saw Conor McGregor come out, and he didn't pull a Masvidal in terms of trying to throw, just come out and try to knee a guy in the jaw. But he threw a haymaker to start. He missed him with the punch, but I believe it was the left thigh sort of caught Cerrone in the face. Okay, that's fine. And then after that, you're clutching and you're using the shoulder and you hit him in the nose three times. If you recall, there's a little break where Cerrone steps away, and I'm saying, man, you've got about 49, 50 fights on your resume. You're experienced enough, and you've won enough fights to know how to step back, gather yourself, and then, oh, say, give me a few seconds to get away from this onslaught, and then I can get back into it. None of that happened. Conor McGregor comes right back at you. You throw a little sidekick, it gets blocked, and then Conor catches you with a kick and ultimately takes you down. All I'm trying to say is that all of this happened inside of 20 seconds. Remember, the punches that ultimately finished the fight took up an additional 15 to 20 seconds. Everything else happened in the first 20 seconds. And my attitude is, with a guy that experienced, you couldn't find a way to survive. You might disagree with that point, saying, Steven, it happened. But my personal opinion is, unless you get caught with a haymaker and you're not senseless or something along those lines, if you had the wherewithal to gather yourself for a few seconds, you should have had the ability to last a little bit longer. That's my personal opinion. And it also emanates from the fact that Cowboy Cerrone had been knocked out the two previous fights he had, not to mention the fact that, again, when the bright lights arrive, he doesn't have the greatest reputation. All of those things lent itself towards me believing the guy appeared in over his head. The moment appeared too big for him, and he couldn't handle it. Now, is that saying quitting? Maybe that word quit isn't apropos. But I think it is apropos to say he clearly appeared way in over his head. There's levels to this, and he did not appear to be on it. I don't think it's criminal to say that.
So in the midst of all of this on Saturday night, Conor McGregor popped up on Twitter and noted that Cerrone broke his nose and his orbital bone by those strikes mm-hmm. and asked you to apologize. What did you make of
– And I didn't.
Yeah. Why not?
I did it, and I'm not. Because I meant what I said. And not only that, profound respect for Conor McGregor. Love the guy. He's phenomenal for the sport. I couldn't be more ecstatic that he won. Because I think he's the number one attraction in the sport. A matter of fact, I'm somebody that, if you recall, when you and I spoke in the aftermath of the Nurmagomedov fight, even though he clearly got beat, if you recall, Ariel, I was telling you, I got to give credit where credit is due. He stepped away from the sport. He engaged in an exhibition match against Mayweather. Then he comes back, and who does he fight? He fights this undefeated monster, Nurmagomedov. And he survived until the fourth round. Remember, he was getting slaughtered in the second round. Or it looked that way because Nurmagomedov was on top of him, you know, trying to take him out with strikes and what have you. And Conor found a way to survive. So what I'm saying to him is that he'll tell me to apologize. If you're telling me to apologize for using the word quit or whatever, fine, that's no problem. But don't tell me that the guy wasn't in over his head. Don't tell me the guy didn't look like the bright lights was just too big and too great for him. Don't tell me that it illuminated on him so much that he didn't seem to be able to handle the pressure of the moment. I'm not apologizing for that. Conor McGregor, as far as I'm concerned, despite four losses on his resume, is elite. And one of the biggest reasons he is elite, even though he's tapped out a couple of times or so, is this reality. He shows up. He shows up for the big events, and the big events never seem to be too much for him. Conor McGregor is not going to be somebody that goes out there and beats himself. You want to beat him, you're going to have to literally do that, beat him. And I don't think Conor McGregor asked me to apologize because of what I said. I think Conor McGregor asked me to apologize because of how Joe Rogan reacted to it. Because like Joe Rogan, Conor McGregor was protecting the sport. What they need to come to the realization of is this. I am not you guys. I don't pretend to be the aficionados that you guys are. If you recall my hit with Joe Rogan, when he said what he said, I literally said, I respect that coming from you, and I will defer to your knowledge. I actually said that on the air. I'm new to this. I'm not pretending to be some MMA aficionado, but I do know fighting. I do know what I'm watching, and I am entitled, based on my 25 years as a journalist in this business, to espouse a point of view based on what I saw. And I'm not going to apologize one bit. I think that they're protecting the sport, but I got news for them. I protect the sport, too, because I love it. And I've been blessed and fortunate that when I'm a part of something, people usually watch, and I contribute in a positive way to uplifting the sport. I want to help in my small way to uplift not just the sport, but guys like you, Joe Rogan, and everybody else who cover it, fighters like Conor McGregor who participate in it. I am a fan. I'm going to be here for a long, long time. I'm personal friends with Dana White, who I think is sensational, but I feel the way that I feel. And if I feel differently than somebody, they're going to have to get over it because that's how I feel, and I ain't shy about saying what I feel because it happens to be my job. I will not apologize, and I will not backtrack from my position, and I don't care what Conor McGregor or Joe Rogan says, although I profoundly respect both. We will just have to respectfully disagree on what we saw.
So you just mentioned I'm new to this. However, Josh Gross, who's a veteran MMA reporter, now works for The Athletic, used to work for ESPN and Sports Illustrated, tweeted a couple days ago, I haven't paid attention to this conversation, but I want to note that Stephen A. Smith covered UFC 41 in February of 2003 in Atlantic City when Tim Sylvia stopped Rico Rodriguez. He and I were the only reporters in Sylvia's locker room after that fight. So for whatever it's worth, Smith has been covering MMA for years. That was his quote. Is that true? Did you cover UFC 41 in 2003? And if so, I would suggest then that you are not new to this.
Well, no, I was in attendance, but a lot of times I would show up to watch it because I enjoyed it. And one of the things I'll share with you, a conversation that I had with Masvidal earlier that morning before fight night of UFC 246. I was talking about, you know, they're talking about striking. They're talking about, you know, chokeholds. They're talking about Muay Thai and all of this other stuff. And I said, listen, let me tell you something. In America, they loved boxing. When you talk about the UFC, you appreciate all those other elements to the fight game that you see in UFC that you would never see in boxing. But understand that Americans are addicted to the knockout when it comes from a pugilistic sport. So when I look at Conor McGregor, it's not just his bravado and his mouth that brings him home, or even the fact that he wins. If Conor McGregor was choking people out, if Conor McGregor was wrestling and he was forcing folks to tap out, he wouldn't be as popular as he is. Conor McGregor was popular because he's a knockout artist. When you talk about Masvidal and him potentially being the heir apparent to Conor McGregor in terms of being the face of the sport, the most popular guy in the sport, primarily it's going to be because of his knockout ability, the fact that he can finish you off, whether it's with a punch or a knee. The reality is that that's what Americans primarily are addicted to. So for me, I've gone to several events over the years, and I wasn't even working. But because I was there, ESPN or somebody else would put a camera in my face and ask me what I felt about what I watched. And that might have been what the guy from The Athletic was talking about, because I haven't covered but so many UFC events. I was sitting ringside when Conor McGregor felt Eddie Alvarez. I was sitting ringside when Daniel Cormier fought the dude with the lifetime contract with Popeye's Chicken and all of this other stuff. I was there ringside, but I didn't have to work those fights. I was just in attendance because I want to support you guys, and I want to support uplifting the sport, because I think the combatants are worthy of our attention. The more shine you bring to them, the more attention you bring to them, the more the sport will be popularized, the more money there is in it for them, for the sport itself, and for those like you and Joe Rogan and others who cover it. I'm not trying to be a detriment to anybody. I'm not trying to steal anybody's shine. As you well know, I got enough jobs.
Yeah.
I get enough airtime. Okay? So I'm fine. I just want to support a growing sport that I think is worthy of our attention and our accolades. And that's all I was trying to do. And that's what I'm going to continue to try to do. And anytime ESPN wants me on it, I'm happy. And if they don't want me on it, I won't lose any sleep over it.
See, I don't like this because I know that you're a big fan, because every time I'm here at the Seaport Studios, you come up to me and you don't just talk to me about McGregor. You mention Junior Dos Santos and Francis Ngannou and Masvidal. I know that you like and respect the sport very much, much like you like and respect basketball, football, baseball, etc.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about something Joe Rogan said, which I think at the end of the day, why this isn't good for us as MMA fans at the MMA community, we come across as fans of that band that was playing in dive bars for years and now finally made it, and they're headlining MSG, and we're like, no, we don't want anyone to attend that show. We don't want anyone to support them because we were there first. We don't want anyone else in there. And that's a bad look. That's not the martial arts way. We have to be inclusive, not exclusive. And he said this, which I want to ask you about. I just think this sport demands more appreciation, more respect, and it demands a higher level of reverence to the athletes who literally put their lives on the line. I agree with that. The athletes do put their lives on the line. But let's not be condescending towards other athletes. They put a lot on the line too. Kobe Bryant walked to the foul line with a ruptured Achilles. That's a fighter right there. I respect that man for doing that. And so to suggest that you don't respect fighters, that Dan Le Batard doesn't respect fighters just because you are critical of them or the sport, which has a lot of warts, by the way, it's not a perfect sport, to me is condescending at times, and it's disingenuous, and that's what I don't like. We need to allow other opinions. That's a byproduct of this sport growing, right, of evolving and being mainstream.
I completely agree with you, but at the same time, here's where Joe Rogan is going to lose. He's going to lose if he thinks for one second there's going to ever be a disrespectful word uttered out of my mouth about him. It's not going to happen. I respect the hell out of him. I respect what he means to the sport. If we were together right now talking, give me 5 minutes with him and he'd probably start laughing and just having a good time. There's no hard feelings. He's protective of the sport. Here's what I think he's missing, and this is what people don't recognize about me. I was a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer who got promoted numerous times and ultimately became a columnist. I didn't know hockey, Ariel, okay? But I still was sent to Game 7 of the Rangers in the Stanley Cup Finals, okay? Because it was part of my job to cover the story. You can cover stories. You can cover moments without being an aficionado or an expertise on the sport. If you ask me to get into the nuances of MMA, martial arts, UFC, I would look right into the camera and I would say, do you know Ariel Helwani? Do you know Joe Rogan? Do you know Brett Okamoto? Do you know these guys? Go to them. When Daniel Cormier and I were ringside together talking about one of the fights, he went first, and he broke out, cracked up laughing, and you could ask him, because I turned to the camera, and I said, I'm going to go with what he said, and everybody started laughing, because it's my way of making sure that they recognize, yeah, I'm Stephen A., and yes, I bring a level of cachet to the table in the world of sports broadcasting, because I cover football, basketball, obviously, with a level of expertise in other sports as well, and of course, boxing, which I've been, again, watching since I was 3 years old and covering my entire career. I covered Olympic boxing in Australia in the Sydney Olympics, at the Sydney Australia Olympics in 2000. I covered boxing, again, in Athens, Greece in 2004, Olympic boxing, not to mention numerous fights. You understand? But my point to you is that regardless of what I know, I'm honest about what I don't know. And even if I did know the UFC, and even if I became an expert with the UFC, which as much as I'm watching it these days, I'm rapidly, you know, getting my feet under me for what have you, I'm never going to take anything away from those like you guys who help uplift the sport and keep it afloat and alive, bringing it to the mind, ear, and eyes of us all before ESPN grabbed a hold of it and is now trying to take it to another level. I don't want to be seen as somebody that you listen to instead of Joe Rogan. I want to be somebody that piggybacks off of Joe Rogan and says, hey, did you hear what this guy said? Did you hear what Ariel said? Did you hear what all of these people say? Because that's how you uplift the sport. I love you guys. I respect the hell out of you guys. And I appreciate the fact that from a professional perspective, we all have that in common. My only regret is that, at least for the moment, Joe Rogan did not seem to appreciate the fact that I have my own accomplishments in this industry. And just because I showed up to comment about a fight and I disagreed with him doesn't eradicate all that I've accomplished because you disagreed with me. All of that wasn't necessary. And that's all I'm saying. I harbor no hard feelings against him. He's a great guy. He's a great man. He's great for the UFC. And I'm honored to have been ringside with him. And I sincerely hope that I'll get an opportunity to do that in the future with all of you guys. You saw how happy I was
yes.
to be there talking with you and Michael Bisping and Chael Sonnen and these guys. They know how I feel about them. Rashad Evans, one time when I did the UFC event at Barclays Center, at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, I was honored to be there alongside him. I've known John Bones Jones a little bit for years. We text each other back and forth from time to time, an Anderson Silva fan and what have you. A Weidman, I met him. He came on First Take on several occasions. Chuck speaks for itself. Matt Hughes back in the day, they used to come on my shows and everything like that. I've been a fan for a while. So I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to love the sport. And I would ask people to appreciate the fact that somebody in the mainstream loves your sport enough to keep the eyes and the attention on the sport so everybody could prosper. Let's just put on our big boy pants and understand that and move on.
Can I ask one last quick question? I know you're up against the
clock.
Sure. But right after sure. all of this came out, this video of you hitting mitts emerged. And I think that people – people think that you posted the video to show your street cred, but that isn't the case. Could you just tell us the genesis of this video and the story behind it? Because they're using this as fuel to the fire that you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, first of all, they could say whatever they want. They're entitled. The video was horrific, and certainly I didn't put it out there. What happened was that I tore my rotator cuff last July. 3 days before the surgery, I was working out. You know, I was sitting there and doing my cardio and all of that stuff, but I wasn't doing anything. And silly me, the trainer was there with me, and I said to him, can I put on some boxing gloves? And he was like, listen, you don't need to be throwing any punches with your shoulders. You got one torn rotator cuff. You got some scar tissue in the other. You don't need to do anything. I said, I just want to put it on there. I said, I'm going to get surgery anyway, whatever. He said, all right, well, do me a favor and try to throw some uppercuts. Just don't do anything else, because you're going to whack out your shoulder even more. Just try to do some uppercuts. It was after a 90-minute workout. I'm used to throwing 6-8-punch combinations with far more speed than that. But the bottom line is that I had jacked up shoulders. I did not know it was being taped, and I certainly did not know it would be posted. It was a private workout, and for some reason, he put that damn thing out 7-8 months ago. Needless to say, he won't be working with me any longer. But the point that I'm trying to make is that it certainly wasn't me at my best or anything like that. But again, that's fine. I'm a grown man. The bottom line is the video is what it was, which is an atrocious display of any kind of boxing or whatever. I actually laughed about it with Teddy Atlas. I said, there's a blessing in everything. And he said, and what would that blessing be? I said, the minute I overcome this rotator cuff, because I'm now 7 months removed from surgery, but it's going to be about another 3 months before I'm 100%. One of the first things I'm going to do is get into the gym with a real boxing trainer like yourself, Teddy. So I will be coming to your gym for you to show me what I should do, because when I'm fighting, I usually don't throw uppercuts. I'm a Tommy Hitman Hearns kind of guy. I like my right hand. I like staying on the outside using my jab in my right hand, not trying to be inside throwing some damn uppercuts with my tall, slim self. But nevertheless, it was an horrific display. It was never meant for public consumption. It should have never been put out there, but it was. And when you sit in my chair, bottom line is that I have to be judgmental and critical of what people do every single day in the world of sports. Who am I to bitch and moan about somebody taking an opportunity to get at me when I'm perceived as somebody who gets at something every day? A matter of fact, the one thing I loved about it is my willingness to show I can take it. Why? Because when I come at you, for whatever reason, you ain't going to be able to say to me, Steven, you couldn't take it when we came at you. I'm a big boy. I can take it. The video was atrocious. It wasn't meant for public consumption. It was done with jacked up shoulders. I should have never been throwing a punch to begin with. All right. I had surgery 3 days later. It is what it is. And you move on.
You're the man, Stephen A. I just want to say I really appreciate this. And, you know, I guess I get a little defensive when I see the MMA community, my community, coming after you. And you don't need me to defend your honor at all. But I remember when I first met you at Mayweather McGregor, you knew who I was. That meant the world. That was before I worked for ESPN. And as I said on Twitter when that story came out about you in, I believe, GQ, you have gone out of your way to always give me props, to comment on my work. You don't have to do that. You can walk right by me, and that's totally understandable. And you've done that and has meant the world to me. So I will always have your back, even though you don't need me to have your back. And I hope that you continue to cover UFC events, and I hope to see you there, and you continue to critique and say whatever you want to say, because you have earned that right, my man. So thank you so much for the time. Good luck out there in Miami. Keep up the great work, as always, and I hope to see you again.
I appreciate it, but let me just say a couple of things. Number one, I think you do a great, great job, and I'm proud to call you a friend and a colleague. Number two, you teach me about the sport every single day, and all of you do, because there's not one single person that I've run across associated with the UFC that hasn't gone out of their way to show me things. Anything I ask Michael Bisping, I ask Rashad Evans, I ask Chael Sonnen and all these guys. You guys are just loaded with knowledge. Even Brett Okamoto, every time I go up to any of y'all, y'all never hesitate to tell me what I don't know, to show me or to answer any questions that I may have. And as it pertains to the sport, I'm just going to remind everybody of one thing. One thing that I've proven throughout my career is to be an asset. I aspire to be an asset for UFC's coverage. I don't aspire to replace anybody. I don't aspire to be somebody that's looked upon as, oh, I'm better than this guy, that guy. I love the sport. And I want to do what I can to help Joe Rogan, to help Dana White, to help Ariel Helwani, to help everybody uplift the sport so we can all benefit and we can all prosper. Unlike boxing, it's ran by promoters. You got a guy overseeing the sport in Dana White, if nothing else, who is great about giving us the fights we want to see when we want to see them instead of making us wait years and years and years for it. I'm incredibly grateful to that. I wish that he had such a profound impact that he was overseeing boxing. He is a friend. I am going to help him. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help the UFC in any way I can. And that includes being an asset in any small way that I can to Joe Rogan, who I have respected for years. If anybody is looking for me to get into something with him, they have come to the wrong place. It's unfortunate that he said what he said, but I didn't lose any sleep over it. It didn't change my day. It ain't going to change my night. And it damn sure ain't going to change my career. I'm going to be around, and I'm going to be around with my hand out, willing, able, and ready to provide any kind of small assistance that I can to help ESPN, the UFC, and everybody involved uplift the sport in any way that I possibly can. And that's really all I have to say.
Amen. Thank you, Stephen A. I really appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
All right, now let's move along. That was tremendous stuff from Stephen A. What a pleasure. And I am being honest when I say he has really gone out of his way to make me feel welcome and to encourage me. And that's why I think the criticism and this whole back and forth about his analysis of that fight and about his place in the sport and whether he should be on the broadcast. I mean, first of all, who are we to say, you know, who should be on ESPN? I think that there are very capable people who decide those things. But it is interesting, and it's really extended far beyond UFC 246. And so with that in mind, let us bring in our old friend New York Rick to talk a little more about this and some other stuff as well. New York Rick, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ariel. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Interesting time. Got a off week, so that's always nice. But then there's an event, I think, from February to April every single weekend. But I just wanted to ask you, before we put all this stuff to bed, how do you feel? Because I've weighed in on this a couple times on different shows, and not necessarily the Stephen A. Smith versus Joe Rogan thing, but I always get the impression that MMA fans and the community, they don't even listen to what the quote-unquote outsiders have to say. They are so defensive when it comes to the sport, and they're so protective of it, and they really do remind me of the fan of that band who doesn't want the band to become mainstream. And I feel like it's often such a bad look whenever this happens. Like, how dare you talk about a sport? And look, no different, I guess, when I show up on a basketball broadcast, I get some people saying, like, what the hell do you know about basketball? So there's always going to be that process where people are going to have to, you know, believe that you know what you're talking about. But every time, like, we have to go through this every time. That's just a byproduct of the sport becoming popular, right? Why does it have to be this way every time?
I think it's a bit of a human nature thing. I think there's a reluctance for change. I think there's also a bit of an attitude of wanting people who, you know, are vetted and who they know have expertise to be kind of elevated into those positions versus somebody who is already a mainstream person coming over and essentially I feel like they feel like they're co-opting what's going on in the MMA world, when in reality, Stephen A. Smith's presence is something that lets everybody know that MMA has arrived. The fact that he is talking about the sport, the fact that he's lending his voice to talk about storylines in this sport is important, is an important step forward. I would argue that many of the same fans that kind of have these complaints are the same fans that are complaining when Masvidal's knee is only number two on SportsCenter, or why doesn't this outlet, or why doesn't this particular MMA moment get attention? So you can't really have it both ways. If you want the mainstream attention for the sport, it comes with this. And naturally, Stephen A. is a great voice for that. So I have no complaints. I do know that this is a personal preference thing. For me, I'm all for additional voices, additional opinions, additional opportunities. Because quite frankly, like, there really aren't that many voices in MMA. I'm kind of getting tired of the same voices.
And by the way, is that a shot at me? I was just wondering if you were saying that I was one of those voices.
No, okay. It is not a shot at you or anybody else, but I'm all for variety.
Sure, sure. And by the way, for the record, this isn't an ESPN thing. Like, we're not being ESPN shows. And by the way, for anyone to say that I'm an ESPN show, what I would say in return is you're 100% right. I'm very proud to work for ESPN. I love working for ESPN. This is an absolute honor and a dream come true. So if you want to call me an ESPN shill, that's totally fine by me. I will live with that. And I'm actually proud to be an ESPN shill if you want to say that I am one. But I was excited when Gus Johnson started calling MMA fights for CBS and Showtime. I thought that was awesome. I loved Gus Johnson back in the day. Like, that was really cool to me. Now, you know, these things happen in MMA. I kind of knew what he was saying, but he's been vilified for that and kind of run out of town. I just think that we need to be a little more receptive, and it's okay. Like, just because something may not be in someone's quote unquote wheelhouse doesn't mean they can't A, learn, doesn't mean they can't B, appreciate. I know Levitard loves MMA, respects the fighters, has Masvidal in studio. I know Stephen A. loves and respects the fighters just because they've never fought before. Guess what? I never fought before. Guess what? Joe Rogan never fought before. I know he trains. He's very qualified. He deserves to be there. He's one of the biggest stars in the sport, period, regardless of if he's a fighter or not. But it doesn't matter. Like, just because these people aren't saying what you want them to say, it doesn't mean that they don't belong there. It doesn't mean that they don't have a right to their opinion, because that's what makes sports fun. Everyone has a say. You want it to just be underground forever? That's no fun. No one wants that. How cool is it that after McGregor's fight, it's leading off SportsCenter in the midst of conference championship weekend? That's a big deal. That's what we've all wanted, right? We all wanted that. No one didn't want that. And guess who really wants that? The fighters really want that, because the more popular the sport gets, the more money they make, the more famous they get. This is a big deal. When I see Jorge Masvidal on Radio Row in Miami at the Super Bowl, that actually warms my heart. Good for Jorge Masvidal. That's great. Yoani on J-Check's there. Good for her. That's great. We need more of that, not less of that. Stop trying to run everyone out of town. Stop trying to intimidate everyone. That's not the martial art way. That's not the Bushido way. Inclusive, not exclusive. Enough.
Yeah, and I think Lebatard and Stu Gotch yesterday made a great point, which is being the first fan of something doesn't mean that you're the only fan of something, doesn't mean that you're the most passionate fan of something. I think there's room in the sandbox for everybody. But I also understand that criticism is part of that. And I think Stephen A. Smith is willing to accept that. He's willing to accept that, hey, I'm not the expert, so I'm leaning on the experts. I'm trying to get that knowledge, and I'm going to get myself more educated on it. Until then, I think there's going to be, you know, a resistance to it. But hopefully this can all be handled, you know, nicely by the MMA community. I have faith in the MMA community.
One last thing on all this. How do you feel? I remember back in the day going on the UG, and there was a rule, no fighter bashing, right? We hold fighters to the highest regard, right? They are larger than life. I have always said that I have so much respect for the fighters. They possess DNA that I can't even dream of possessing. They have the utmost courage going into the cage, fighting, putting their lives on the line, their health and safety on the line. It's incredible what they do. I love them. I love covering the sport because of the fighters. Not so much the fights themselves, but because of the fighters and who they are and what they represent. But this idea that you can't be critical of fighters, right, if they have an off night, if they don't quote-unquote show up and all that stuff, to me is a little funky. Like, why? Just because they're doing something that's incredibly dangerous, just because they're doing something that takes a lot of courage, doesn't mean that they may not be open to criticism. You know, a fighter, I've seen this, I've heard of this. Like, some fighters don't train for fights. Some fighters drink before their fights. Remember the guy who headlined 246? He said it himself. Like, fighters can be open to criticism. Fighters can be, you know, subjected to that type of rhetoric. Why is it that if you are critical of a fighter, you're labeled as someone who disrespects the sport, who doesn't have the utmost respect for fighters? That to me isn't right as well. Like, we should be able to, that's just part of the gig, that they should be tough enough to accept that sort of criticism. Now, it has to be respectful, of course. You can't just go be like, that dude's a bum and, you know, he can't hold my jockstrap. I get that, but Stephen A. wasn't saying that.
Yeah, I think there's nuance to that conversation, obviously. If the analysis is what's being criticized, right? Or rather, if analysis of the performance is what's being done, if we're looking at technicalities and things like that, I think that's fair game, like it would be in any other sport. But I think some of the resistance for that comes from a place of, if you're going to analyze this sport, you need to have some level of knowledge. And I think there's people out there who are questioning the level of knowledge. And I think that's where it comes from. That said, if it's not a technical breakdown, if it's not X's and O's, if it's not that nuanced knowledge that you need to have from years of expertise, I think it's a fair criticism. And if we're going to talk about Stephen A. Smith's analysis in particular, I really didn't have much of a problem with it. And I don't think that it was fighter bashing as much as his viewpoint of the fight. And now I think he himself would be open to a debate on that. I think he'd be open to a debate, even if it was with Cowboy Cerrone, to say, hey, this is what really happened in the fight. He's trying to learn. And I think it's fair game for somebody to analyze the fight on a technical basis.
All right, now let's move along to the heavyweight division. This past Saturday, Curtis Blaydes picked up a big win over Junior Dos Santos. And now people are starting to say, all right, what's going on with Stipe? He should be stripped. He isn't fighting enough. He hasn't been active. They should institute an interim title, all this stuff and more. How would you handle the heavyweight division right now with DC breathing down his neck? You've got Blaydes out there doing his thing. He's won three in a row, looked very good. You've got Rozenstruik and Ngannou fighting March 28th on ESPN+. What do you do with the division right now?
are we assuming that Miocic is going to be out for an extended period?
Okay, so then let me clarify maybe a little bit more. Let me weigh in and then you can respond to what I'm going to say.
Sure.
Stipe Miocic last fought 5 months ago. Can we all just chill out a little bit? Like, what is all this talk of stripping him and all this talk of interim titles and all this stuff? Daniel Cormier deserves to be the number one contender, and that's the fight to make. I think where the frustration is coming, it's coming from the fact that he is not being clear with A, his timeline, and B, his intentions. So his timeline seems a little bit up in the air. Like, is he coming back in July? Is he coming back in May? Is he coming back in August? Is he coming back in September? We don't know. And also, when he speaks or when his management speaks, they're not saying, look, our vision is paramount. It's the most important thing. But when we come back, make no mistake about it, we're fighting Daniel Cormier. We are going to retire Daniel Cormier. The trilogy fight is what we want. Because deep down inside, if they're being honest, the trilogy fight gets them the most amount of money. That's the biggest fight out there. Of all the possibilities, that's the biggest fight out there. And so I think that that's why DC's getting anxious. I think that that's why the fans are getting a little annoyed and saying, hey, strip, interim title, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's only been 5 months. So I believe in the idea of if you don't fight within 12 months or if you don't have a fight booked within 12 months as champion, then you can get stripped. Or the interim title comes into play. But it's only been 5. We need to give him a little more time. If it becomes clear by July, August that he's A, not coming back and has no plans of fighting, now we could start talking about getting stripped. But this seems a little premature, does it not?
It seems premature, but if you're asking me who's next for the title, it's hard to gauge, right? Like,
what?
Is that title
going
to be
DC?
I would like to see Stipe and DC be the fight, but it's hard to argue that Curtis Blaydes or Francis Ngannou with a win or Rozenstruik with a win isn't a worthy challenger. No, I wouldn't.
That's the fight to me. I mean, it's a way bigger fight. First of all, how many times can you get someone fighting in a retirement fight for the belt, especially someone as accomplished where it's not a token little situation like a Dan Henderson fighting Michael Bisping when it was clear he really didn't deserve that title shot? Like, how could you even consider anything else?
So then what do you – okay, I'll ask you in return to that. What would you do with those fighters?
Okay.
The winner of Ngannou and Rozenstruik and Curtis Blaydes, what do you do with those two fighters?
Okay, so if Ngannou wins, right, and that's March 28th, so it's in, I guess, 2 months from yesterday. Yeah, today's the 29th. If
yep.
Ngannou wins, I say just let him chill for a second because we're hopeful that – Miocic Cormier 3 will happen July or so, July, August. That's what we're hoping, at least as of right now. And we've been told not much, but that's the hope. And that's the hope that DC has because then he's going to really start to get anxious and lose patience. So if Ngannou wins, then let him chill. If Rozenstruik wins, then I would do Rozenstruik versus Blaydes. Because remember, Ngannou is 2-0 against Blaydes. So the idea, like, I like that fight now. They're in a much different spot than the last two times that they fought. But to ask a guy to fight a guy a third time that he beat twice seems like a lot. It's only happened a couple times before, and it just seems like a lot. So that's what I would do. Just wait and see. If Ngannou wins, let him chill. If Rozenstruik wins, let him have Blaydes, and that will be the number one contender fight, and the winner will fight the winner of Miocic-Cormier. And if it's Cormier who wins and he vacates the title, then that fight will be for the vacant title. And that's
that it. Sounds clean and neat, but it's all predicated on the idea of a summer fight between Cormier
yes.
and Miocic, which at this moment – is not looking likely.
Well, I don't think that's fair. Not looking likely, or maybe we just don't know his status.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know his status. Every time there's been any talk of Stipe Miocic, it's been need to heal my eye and no timetable for return.
Well, so and it's also been Tyson Fury. We
right.
need to look at other people, which that's the part that kind of gets under my skin. Like, I'm saying everyone needs to get off his back. Like, just give the guy some time. But I feel like he needs to be a little more clear. And that's when it starts to come across as, all right, is he milking this? Is he trying to give DC a taste of his own medicine? Do you remember this time last year, we were talking about the exact same scenario, except DC was the champion and Stipe was the one breathing down his neck. And now
yeah.
the tables have turned. And it's like, all right, come on. Did we forget the fact that DC also was coming off back surgery? The same thing I said last year, give the guy time. It's the same thing I'm saying now, give the guy time. But the difference is last year, the UFC was trying to book the Brock fight. DC wasn't chasing it. They brought it to him. And then, of course, he said yes. This time, they want to book the trilogy. So just do the trilogy. Like, why are we Why are we ignoring the fact that that's the biggest fight out there for you? Why are you even considering these other guys when it's very clear that a fight against Blades or a rematch against Ngannou or a fight against Rozenstruik or anyone in MMA is nowhere near as big as a Cormier trilogy fight for you?
No, it seems like games, you know, either a political angle or trying to give DC a taste of his own medicine. But at the same time, if you're Francis Ngannou and you waited all this time to finally get a matchup with Yair Rozenstruik, and then you beat him, and now you have to wait again while DC and Miocic resolve their issue, who knows when? Maybe it's the summer, maybe it's not. It puts you in a tough position. If you're somebody like Francis Ngannou, you're getting the short end of the stick, and it's not his fault. So I understand the urgency of the heavyweight division. I understand the urgency of the people who feel like they've made their claim for a title shot. I definitely agree that I don't want to see Francis Ngannou versus Curtis Blaydes again. So again, I think it's Stipe Miocic is the linchpin in all of this, and we don't have any clarity.
No Super Bowl weekend card. This used to be a staple of the UFC schedule, right? Favorite Super Bowl weekend moment?
I have three. Two of them are special and favorite and feel good, and one of them is not favorite, but significant and important. The first one being BJ Penn defeating Matt Hughes to win the welterweight strap. That was, one of the defining moments of my MMA fandom. Another defining moment of my
By the way, that card was sick. GSP made his debut on that card, his UFC debut. Lee Murray had his only UFC appearance. Vitor Belfort, Randy Couture ended unceremoniously, but that was a great card. That was UFC 46.
Imagine a card like that now with all those names.
GSP on the prelims. GSP on the prelims making his debut against Carl Parisian.
The Heat, legendary.
Yes.
Another very important Super Bowl weekend memory for me was UFC 126. In addition to the Anderson Silva kick on Vitor Belfort, which is legendary and has gone down in history as one of the best knockouts ever, it is also the card where John Jones defeated Ryan Bader. And after the fight, they let John Jones know. I think he knew, obviously, that Rashad was injured, but they let John Jones know that Rashad would not be fighting Shogun at UFC 128, and it would instead be John Jones getting his title opportunity. And at the time, I had tickets to that fight card, even though John Jones had not been put into that fight yet. I was excited about Rashad versus Shogun, and it turned into John Jones, the coronation of John Jones. So that was a very significant date. Even though the fight didn't happen on that date, the announcement of John Jones being a title contender happened on that date. And then the last one, unfortunately, was GSP defeating BJ Penn at UFC 94, which isn't a favorite memory of mine, but it was significant. It was a super fight at the time when super fights were rare.
Can I tell you a story? I don't know if I've ever shared this story, how I feel like I am, in some respects, largely responsible for the Rashad Evans-John Jones fight. Have I ever told the story about how that fight could have never happened had we not made a certain decision? Did I ever tell you this story?
I think the people need to hear it.
Okay. So after that fight against Ryan Bader, UFC 126, Jones wins, gets down on his knees. He's going to get the title shot. This is huge. He's fighting Shogun. He's young, all that stuff. Everyone starts to think, all right, well, what's going to happen between him and Rashad, right? Their teammates, Jackson Wink, are they going to fight each other? Is this going to separate them? It's going to be too much drama, all that stuff. A couple of weeks after that, I was working for Versus at the time, Versus the television network, which is now NBCSN, and we were doing pre- and post-fight shows for the UFC events, because you'll remember towards the tail end of their deal, they had, I think, around three or four UFC events a year in addition to WEC, and then once the WEC went away, then they just had a couple years of just UFC events. They had some, they had Jones Matyushenko, and they had DC Dominic Cruz, Chris Lytle against Dan Hardy, etc. So they sent me to Albuquerque to interview John Jones. We interviewed him in the middle of the cage, and we were going to air 5 or so minutes of this interview during the pre-fight show of the Martin Kampman Diego Sanchez card in Lexington, Kentucky. Is that where it was? Yeah, Kentucky, the Yum Center. Is that Lexington, Kentucky? Louisville, Kentucky. So I do the interview, right? And in the interview, I ask John Jones, if you win the belt, would you fight Rashad Evans?
And for the first time ever, because Rashad said he wouldn't fight John, and up until that point, John said he wouldn't fight Rashad, John says, yes, I would fight Rashad. And in my mind, I'm like, holy crap, this is nuts. He actually said he would fight him. This is going to be insane. This is going to be massive news. What a big scoop, et cetera, et cetera. So, all right, but the piece is only coming out several weeks later. The night before the pre-fight show, we're in Louisville. We're having a production meeting, and they say, okay, and at this point, you know, your interview with John Jones is going to air a five-minute version of the interview. And so I say, oh, by the way, what like topics did you guys choose for the piece, you know, the five-minute piece? They tell me this, that. And then I say, wait a second, did you not put in the Rashad Evans part? No, we didn't really think that that was a big deal. And I'm like, what? You don't think that that's a big deal? That's the biggest deal of them all. Now, this happens, you know, speaking of what we were just talking about, newer fans, newer people, they don't really know the sport. I'm like, no, guys, that is massive news, gigantic news. That is seismic news. Like, you have to include that in the piece. And this is 24 hours before, and they said there's no time. They said we can't include it. We can't have an edit session, or we can't book an editor or something, I don't know. We can't do it. I was like, oh, my God, this is crazy. This is going to be, like, one of the most important moments in MMA history, and it's never going to see the light of day. And so what we ended up deciding on was the piece would air. I would come back on camera, and then I would say, oh, and by the way, and then I would toss to that moment. Toss is like a TV term. Like, I would say, oh, check this out. So we ended up doing that. We ended up playing the piece, had nothing to do with Rashad. I come back on camera. I'm sitting at the desk, by the way, with Molly Karam, I believe, who now is the host of First Take. And then I throw to the Rashad Evans portion of the conversation. And then, of course, what happens afterwards, it leads to the, you know, the dissolving of their relationship. John beats Shogun. I actually interviewed Rashad. You can still see the interview on YouTube right now. Seconds after that fight, cage side, and he's like, man, I'm done with Jacksons. Remember that? He said, I'm done with Jacksons. I'm not coming back, and this is the end and all that stuff. And thus, the build for UFC 145 happened. And in the build for UFC 145, in the countdown, all over the place, was that conversation. They pointed to that as the genesis of, you know, the breakup between Rashad, the teacher, and the student, John Jones. And so had I not asked the night before, if I just assumed that they had put that in there, that they recognized the importance, the magnitude of that comment, and the thing aired, and I didn't have a chance to then, you know, tell them it was important and then throw to it, that feud may never have happened. Isn't that crazy?
MMA history.
Yes.
It's all playing out. Incredible that almost never happened.
Yes.
Now,
it's possible that at some point they would have said something, and if they really felt that way about each other, it would have, you know, it would have dissolved on its own, and they would have had the breakup, and they would have fought. But I always think, and in the build-up to that fight, I always thought, like, I always took credit for, oh, look, I was the one who asked the question and blah, blah, blah. But really, the credit needs to go to actually recognizing the night before, hey, I'm actually working with people that don't know a lot about MMA. Maybe they didn't realize that this was a big deal, and sure enough, they didn't. And I just always thought, wow, if I didn't ask that question, what would have happened? It's like that movie Sliding Doors.
Yeah, you have to assume that the reason John was willing to say yes to that question was that in some capacity, at some level, this relationship was already kind of dissolving. But the public was not aware of this, and the public was almost not made aware of this unless you had been able to toss from the desk from the desk to that interview. And I remember that countdown show. I remember that being a crucial part of the lead up. And I wonder if you told John and Rashad that story,
yeah.
Where they were in their minds at,
yes,
that moment, like where Rashad was when he was thinking about what happened there.
Amazing. Anyway, Super Bowl weekend, always fun. You mentioned the big
ones. Wait, yeah, what about yours?
The other ones that come to mind, I mean, obviously the Silva Belfort knockout was tremendous. Did I say Silva Belfort? Yeah. That was tremendous. UFC 126, cover of the video game. Shout out to James Law for getting the photo. They pretty much just took the photo from him. UFC 81, also tremendous for two reasons. Big Nog finally gets a UFC belt, even though it was an interim title submitting Tim Sylvia. But more importantly, Brock Lesnar's debut, you know, the Steve Mazzagatti moment where he halts the fight. It looks like Brock is just going to steamroll right through Frank Mir. Mazzagatti halts the fight, deducts a point for the illegal blow. And then shortly thereafter, I remember the tap, like the slow acceptance of, oh, my God, I got caught by this guy with Mir all beat up. Mir submits him and essentially ignites one of the best feuds in UFC history. 94 is special because I worked on the primetime show. I was in between jobs. MMA Rated had been sold, and I couldn't get back into the MMA media business. Talk about sliding doors. And so my friend Jason Hare, who's currently working on that 5- or 10-part Chicago Bulls documentary for ESPN and has produced some amazing 30 for 30s. Yeah. Has done like the Chicago Bears one, the 85 Bears one, the Fab 5 one, did the Andre the Giant dog. Anyway, he asked me if I wanted to help because he knew nothing about MMA. And so I was in charge of the BJ section. And that's when I realized that BJ wasn't really training for that fight because it was at 170 and was just like going on leisurely jogs. So that one.
Running the rock is a proven training method.
Yes, yes, yes. So that one comes to mind. Condit Diaz, obviously UFC 143. And one more, UFC 67 was a great one because it was the debut of Quentin Rampage Jackson and Mirko Krokop. And then of course, oh, wow. Anderson Silva was supposed to fight, Travis Luter for the belt. Luter misses weight. And then it becomes a non-title fight. And GSP was supposed to fight Sarah on that card as well. It was supposed to be both. Title fights from The Ultimate Fighter, but I believe it was GSP who got injured, or it might have been Sarah. My memory is a little foggy at this point, so they postponed it to UFC 69, the first ever event in Houston, and then, of course, Matt Serra knocks him out, and we're going to Houston next week, so how about that?
We're going to Houston. There you go.
How about that?
It's funny how all these, very few of these are contemporary, right? Like, there's not a lot of recent Super Bowl weekend memories. And now the tradition this year is not even happening. Yeah.
Yeah, like UFC 169, I think, was the last pay-per-view. And then they did like a couple of fight nights, but that didn't feel big enough. And then they just stopped doing it. And I think it kind of makes sense, to be honest, because there's so much attention. There's so many resources on the game itself. Why try to compete against that? So I kind of think it makes sense from a business standpoint. But it was always fun being in Vegas and, you know, people betting on the games and all that stuff. The vibe there was just tremendous. All right. Before we go, there's a few more things that we have to get to. I just wanted to bring up. I mean, I know that you're a huge basketball fan like I am, and I noticed that on Sunday afternoon, TST, who doesn't tweet a lot, was tweeting a lot, or at least retweeting a lot of things about Kobe Bryant's shocking death and his daughter's shocking death and all the other lives that were lost, the 7 lives in that helicopter crash. I talked about it a little bit on Monday, but I have to be honest, I still can't get over it. Like, I'm mesmerized by just watching everything. I thought TNT did a phenomenal job with Inside the NBA yesterday and, all the clips that have been posted and I think ESPN has done a tremendous job of covering the story, but I just can't get enough of it. Like, I can't stop listening to podcasts about it. I can't stop watching clips. I can't stop going on YouTube and watching old moments. And, I think it's because of the impact that he had on all of us as sports fans, but also I think as parents and as fathers of daughters, it's tremendously painful to just think about those closing moments. And so I just wanted to know how you were handling it and how you were feeling about it all.
Yeah, it definitely touched me at a very like real and emotional level, you know, being a girl dad, having my, you know, 2-year-old daughter. It really touched me at a level that I can't say it probably would have a few years ago. But I think what's so interesting and incredible about this whole thing is that it almost doesn't feel like he's gone because there's so much footage of him, because there is so much out there of Kobe Bryant, because he grew up so much in the spotlight as a 17, 18-year-old kid coming into the NBA in an era where now video was so important and so crucial and owning those archives. There's so much out there of Kobe and the continual outpouring of clips and support and images and conversations and talking about Kobe almost feels like it doesn't need to end. Like there is so much there that this legacy can kind of continue and continue to grow forever. I think the shock is going to set in. I think shock was the initial part. I think the reality of this is going to set in with a little bit more time. But at the moment, I'm kind of happy to see how much of a celebration of him and Gigi it is versus it can, you know, obviously there's people who are affected by this in an emotional and a way that causes mourning. But at the same time, I think there's so many people who idolize Kobe and are willing to celebrate him right now that it's really, really heartwarming to see.
TST?
Yeah, I agree with Eric. It's the reality of this setting in is going to take a while. I mean, I still, when you see the headlines or the bars going across the TV that Kobe Bryant is dead at age 41 and his daughter and the seven others killed, it still doesn't feel real. And this will definitely be one of those moments for the rest of your life that you remember exactly what you were doing, where you were at that time. I got a phone call. I was at the laundromat doing my laundry, and I was in the middle of the laundromat, and someone called me and told me the news that TMZ was reporting, and I just let out a huge, like, what? Like, what? No, you can't be serious. And so then you go online, and the moments immediately after that, you're just like, man, no, this can't be true. And it breaks my heart every time I think about it, Ariel, like you. I'm listening, constantly reading things. I can't get enough of the coverage, and this is going beyond sports. This is on CNN. This is on all the networks. This is on your local news. And as more and more is coming out of this, it just breaks my heart every time, especially when you throw in the family aspect of it, the community aspect of it, what Kobe meant to Los Angeles for so many years. It breaks my heart thinking about it. And but the positive spin on this is the sports world and the entire world at large and internationally, because that's how big an impact Kobe Bryant had, is coming together to remember him. And that will always be the great unifier to what we call sports. And that's what's so inspiring. You know, obviously this is a horrible tragedy, but knowing that we can all come together and celebrate and share some laughs about Kobe's life and share some incredible memories of his basketball life, that is uplifting. That's the great thing in this.
Turn that off. Avery, turn that off.
Yeah, right there. Speaking of being a girl dad, New York Rick, you good?
I'm good.
Okay. We heard you telling your daughter to turn it off.
I pressed mute. I thought I was on mute.
No,
she's not.
No.
Looking at screens, is she?
No, she's playing with a little electronic puppy that makes noise, and that's not conducive for me talking on this interview.
Yes. No, it's okay. And that's the joy of being a dad and a girl dad. The part that makes this, I think, very hard is you're seeing the raw emotion of people that we consider to be somewhat larger than life. Like when you see Shaquille O'Neal and Jerry West and Reggie Miller and Ernie Johnson and these people and Stephen A. Smith and Jalen Rose and Jay Williams grieve openly on the air, it for some reason it almost makes it hurt a little more, because these people are, you know, people that I think that we put on a pedestal and they are superstars. And to see someone like Kobe, who was really almost, you know, packaged as immortal, Mamba mentality and playing through the ruptured Achilles and shooting, you know, free throws with a broken arm and just always overcoming obstacles and doing what he did. And now to just think that he's not here anymore. How is that possible? How is this guy who really seemed present, that in his second act, he was going to be more impactful than in his first act of life, and how he was so happy to be a dad and so happy that his daughter was going to be a better player than he was and all this stuff. How is this possible? How could this act? Like, I can't wrap my head around it. I can't digest it. And it's just a shock. I mean, this is, you know, I wasn't around for Roberto Clemente. I wasn't around for Thurman Munson. I wasn't around for John Lennon. I do remember Lady Di. I do remember Michael Jackson. This one, I think, is going to be one that is going to haunt us forever. And we'll be talking about where we were when it happened and the aftermath and what these weeks were like after. I mean, I just think that this is going to be one of those moments. And you know what really makes me sad? What really makes me sad is that he was a tremendous player, one of the greatest ever, 5 championships, all that stuff. But he's always going to be, you know, the great player who died in the plane crash or the helicopter crash. Like, that's now going to be a part of his story. And that really sucks. You know, that really, really sucks that is who he is. Because he just seemed like he was destined for such great things. Like the way he talked to the younger players, even that one moment at the UFC retreat, how he talked about, you know, coming together, not just for yourselves, but about the next generation. This guy who was branded as being selfish, in his, again, second act, seemed very selfless, and was putting his family first and all this stuff. And it's just all the footage and all the photos, all the videos, it's really hard to take. It's painful. It like physically hurts. And so it's just been tough. It's been tough to think about other things. And I didn't want to harp on it too much on today's show, because I recognize that we are an escape valve for you guys who listen to the show, and you don't want to be, you know, you can go out and listen to a bunch of stuff on Kobe. And I know that we are an MMA show, but I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't just bring him up ever so briefly here and just talk about how we were feeling, because this has been a really hard week. If you're a father, if you're a sports fan, if you're neither,
everyone, I think, has been affected by this. And it's just been really tough. So anyhow, I just wanted to talk about it a little bit and share some thoughts and just say I'm still having a hard time coming to terms with it. And I don't feel like myself. I still feel like I'm in a fog. And I never met the man. I never spoke to him. I was in his presence once at that Body Armor press conference, and that was a thrill in its own right. But I didn't have a relationship with him. I just watched him for many years and tried to get my hair cut like him one time. And that was pretty much it. So anyway, I can't believe he's not here anymore. And I can't believe he won't get a Hall of Fame acceptance speech. And, worst of all, I can't believe his daughter won't get a chance to be in the WNBA, and those other two girls who, unfortunately passed away as well, won't get their chance to live out their dreams. And by the way, I recognize the fact that people die every day and there's tragedies every day. I recognize that. But there's no denying that, you know, these people that we essentially invite into our homes and watch on a daily basis and talk about on an hourly basis have an impact on us. And that's okay. It's fine. You don't have to be ashamed of that. These things are different. And, for a guy of his stature to die like that is just hard to handle right now. So in any event, TST, I do believe we have, a review that you wanted to bring to our attention.
I do have a review, and this comes from IX. It is a 5-star review, and so he has a bone to pick with you two. He says, I'm a big U and New York Rick fan, but I was listening to last Wednesday's show, and the talk that Khabib is number 2 pound for pound and maybe the best in the world caught my ire. So he says, listen, Khabib's height and weight is on par with most welterweights. I don't think Khabib can beat Usman, Woodley, Covington, Masvidal, or even Wonderboy Thompson. I believe he benefits from the fact that lightweight is not filled with dominant wrestlers at the top of the division, while welterweight is. No one addresses the topic of Khabib competing at welterweight, yet he's quick to be crowned the best in the world. He could be the lightweight GOAT, but not best in the world unless he fights at welterweight. I hope to hear your thoughts.
All right, pause that review for 1 second. I'm going to get to that later on in the show, but in the midst of us taping this, right now, it's around 2:17 p.m. Eastern time, I got a couple of videos of what appears to be a verbal altercation between Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman. They're both in Miami right now. They're at Super Bowl Media Radio Row, whatever you call it, and they're doing a bunch of media. This is when all the media comes together in a big room, and you go from, you know, station to station, and apparently both of them were there doing some promotional work and got into a verbal altercation. I posted both the videos that I got on my Twitter and Instagram, and a bunch of them are popping up right now. And so TST, I need you to call Jorge Masvidal right now. He's going to join us literally seconds after this all went down to explain his side of the story, all right?
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so in a matter of seconds, we are going to connect with Jorge Masvidal and get his side of the story. TST calling him right now again in Miami, verbal altercation between Usman and Masvidal. There's been talks of them going back and forth, fighting each other, saying things about each other. You know the whole story. You know the drill. You know what happened. You know the backstory here. But now they're in the same room, and apparently it's on site when you're in the same room. But it doesn't appear as though any punches were thrown or anything like that. So that is good news for everyone involved. So I think that we have Masvidal right now. He's in Miami literally just minutes after this actually happened, and I really want to get his side of the story. So first off, Jorge, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm right here right now.
Okay, so what happened?
I'm not at Radio Row no more. Just another Wednesday, you know, me running into haters and people talking shit and blasphemizing my name and stuff, and just saying things that are not true, you know. And I just wanted this person to say to my face and address it to my face. And he's a coward, and he got all butt hurt and stuff. And then he has this cast on, so I have to treat him out. Fuck you up, man, when it's between me and you. And I know a lot of people hear this and go, why you gotta be so mean? Motherfucker, one, because that's me, too. This motherfucker should have never opened his mouth, started talking all the wild shit that he's been talking when he can't back it up, man. And if I ever get lucky enough to get my hands on him, I'll show the world the difference in skill set and dog between me and him. Because I say before every fight, when I got respect for the guys and the skill set that they bring, this is the guy that I'm going to embarrass from start to finish.
Okay, could you tell us?
I say that with all the conviction in the world.
How did it actually start? Did he say something to you? Did you say something to him? Did he see you first? Did you see him first? Can you tell us how it actually kicked off?
Well, I just told him, I go, man, you've been talking a lot of shit, saying this and that. I'm going to straight up say it to your face. You're not there for nobody else. He goes, what's that? I go, I'm going to fuck you up. You know, I'm just letting you know, I'm going to embarrass you from start to finish so you don't see she say, she say stuff. No, I'm letting you know right to your face. I'm going to fuck you up the same way that I've let a lot of my opponents before. You know, I like to do it more in private if it could just be me and them and look them right in the show and tell them I'm going to fuck you up. But, you know, I didn't get that chance with this dude. I don't like Usman, you know. If I could have altercations with him every day, I wouldn't mind.
Did anyone touch the other? Were there any punches, pushes?
He's not stupid, man. He plays tough guy on TV, but he's not stupid. What is that guy going to do in a scenario like that? Hug my legs? Come on, man. You know he can't punch through a fucking wet paperback. So what is he going to do in a scenario like that? Nothing but look down and have to take a seat. You know, he's a punk. He did a lot of screaming and stuff and shouting. But that I just wanted to tell him one thing. Like, man, I'm just going to fuck you up. You don't got to take that personally. It's just what's going to happen, man. You know, just relax. You don't got to be loud about it or nothing. Because I said it very calmly and right to his face. I'm going to fuck you up. You know, there was no need for him to overreact like that. You know, he's just sensitive, man, because he doesn't like the truth.
Did he say anything to you when you said that to him?
Yeah, he said a lot of mumble rap and shit. I don't know what he said, but he said something about this and that and that and that. Fucking care less. I just wanted to let him know my message. I'm going to fuck you up. And I don't want you to just hear me say it on TV and then, oh, you could deny or confirm the conviction. No, I'm going to say it to your face so you see how much conviction I have behind it.
And so when something like this happens and you're a little bit fired up, I could tell, like, does this in your mind cement the fact this guy has to be next? Has this made the decision final for you?
You know my history, Ariel. I'm serving all types of meals. It doesn't always mean that I'm gonna go only to that client. I'm a drive through. I'm giving these motherfuckers what they need: 3 pieces and sodas, buffets to the face, fucking shins to the collarbone. It doesn't matter. I'm handing them out. If he gets it now, tomorrow, or 10 years from now, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, there's bounties on everybody's head that's in my division, and that's everybody from number one all the way down to number 15. There's bounties on everybody's head. It's just I got to get the most money possible for each and every one of these motherfuckers that I'm going to go against.
By the way, I'm watching the video. Someone texted it to me. But how long ago did this happen? It's 2:21 right now. Would you say it happened like 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago? How long ago?
I don't know. Yeah, 10, 15 minutes ago.
Wow. Man, the nose is quick, huh? You got to give me props for that.
What? You're freaking Blake. I didn't even know what Abe was asking me. He's like, hey, Ariel has some questions for you. I'm like, I just talked to Ariel. What do you mean? He goes, no, he's talking about the incident right now. I go, what?
Yes, thank
Ariel,
you.
Ariel's plugged up in Langley. I know they got you in the CIA headquarters over there in Langley doing some wild shit.
Listen, the 305 is kind of like my second home. So when things happen, people hit me up. I was just curious if no one was in between you guys, because I've seen the footage now and people kind of were in between you. Do you think you would have gotten physical with him?
If he acts like he's gonna do anything other than just breathe in a way that I like him to breathe, yeah, he's done. I'm a tiger. He's a beta. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't do something that might disturb the animal's peace. So he knows he has to be very relaxed and nice and calm. When there's people around, he gets a little wilder. But when there's nobody around, I've known this guy for years. He's been around me for years. He knows I'm not that guy that got his jaw broken. He can't ever run up on me like that and start talking. He knows I'll slap the shit out of him. Then I'll beat his fucking ass. Now, he does have a cast in his hand. And the little bit of human that's still left in me is like, man, I'm not going to touch this dude because he has this cast in his hand, because I don't want no excuses for him. Like, oh, he beat me up because I had a cast in my hand. I'll wait till that thing comes off you. Though I know it's fake, you know, because he said it himself. He went to the doctor. He doesn't know what's wrong with him. He has a cast on his hand. Maybe he fights next year. I don't know. But when me and him fight, I don't know when that takes place. All I can tell you, though, is that I will baptize this dude. My greater canvas is going to be painted on his face.
Where do we stand right now? Is there any update from the last time we spoke on your next fight? Is it going to be Usman? Is it going to be Conor? What could you tell us about your future?
Out of pure coincidence and luck, out of nowhere, just spoke to Nick Diaz's manager.
Oh.
You know, and it was interesting and a lot of different insight, because UFC saying one thing and it's completely different from what we were hearing, you know. And then to hear it now from Nick Diaz's manager, things make a lot more sense now. The UFC was sending us all types of crazy things that I'm not willing to wait for no man. You know, they're telling me this and that and that and this. I got a complete different. In the beginning of this year, we got options. Who's looking for? Who's going to give me that nice chunk of change that somebody like me has been working 16 years professionally, busting his ass needs? That's what we're looking for. You know, if it's up to me, I mean, I respect Nick. Look, got nothing but respect for him and his brother. I got a lot of respect for Conor, for what he's done inside the cage, you know. It's not personal with those guys, but Usman, I don't like his ass one bit. I haven't liked him never, probably, you know. I just want to fuck his ass up, man. And he's besides him having 17 personalities and nobody understanding not one of them, he's just a punk, man. It's the same guy like 5-6 years ago was asking to take pictures. Oh, fucking, I've seen your backyard fights and all this. Shut the fuck up, man. They're fucking groupie.
So if you had to predict right now, you think it's Usman in July?
If I was to tell you who I don't like and I want to break their face, not for free, but them, but, you know, like, whatever, mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be Usman, man. I generally don't like him as a person. And he's beating, not the last guy, because he's not top team, but he's beating other guys that are from top team that are some of my friends, that are some of my training partners. So just for that alone, you don't understand how much hurting I want to put on this guy. You know, I want to really separate myself from the pack on this guy's account. You know, I'm off his back, I'm going to catapult myself to another level.
Okay. And by the way, what did Nick Diaz's manager tell you? That they're trying to get the fight with you?
We're talking. I won't get into details of that because there's too many people listening. But it was all good stuff, you know? And oh. it's crazy to hear from the horse's mouth as opposed to a third party via trickiness and weirdness. They were saying all types of crazy shit. And, you know, we're going to figure it out. We're gonna make the decision that makes the most motherfucking dollars and cents.
Okay. So in conclusion, Radio Row earlier today, Miami, you see Usman, he's doing media. You guys are going back and forth. You tell him what you think of him. You don't really remember what he said back to you. It was broken up and the whole thing just kind of lasted a few minutes, right?
Yeah, pretty much, you know. He's a beta, man. Can't ask too much of him.
And are you still there? Is there a chance you'll see him again or have you left?
No. I actually got things to do, man. I got to go some time. They got Usman for like one segment. I've been Levitt's been in the show, and it's for a damn reason. Not just because I could speak and people understand me, but it's because I fight when I go in the ring. I fucking give it my all. I fucking give people fast and give it their all. And that's me, man. Not too many people are into that just hugging stuff to no avail. Yeah, his last fight, he got a KO, but I got more KOs than he has wins. So what the fuck, man? What are we talking about here?
All right. Jorge, I appreciate you doing this. I know I've been bothering you a lot lately, but there's a lot going on in your life, okay? So I felt like we needed to get your side of the story here. So thank you very much, my man. I appreciate you coming on very quickly here.
So, and don't forget, your boy has his mezcal out. If you're getting fucked up, it better be off my mezcal, everybody listening, because I'll find you.
Respect.
That's it. I'm leaving it at that.
Okay.
Good night, my brother.
Good night. There he is, the 305 zone. I mean, it is Super Bowl week in Miami. And so you might as well have Jorge Masvidal on, and you can see on my Twitter, on my Instagram, I posted the video of what happened. I feel like I'm doing a live show here, TST. Like, this is actually happening as we speak. We need to be live now, okay? Enough of this tape stuff. Are you guys still there? Is anyone still there?
I'm still here. Rick is still here.
I'm still here.
Any comment? I'm sure you saw the video now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a little heated. It's getting a little heated, but they were separated by quite a bit, but it's a good look. Masvidal versus Usman is not a bad alternative if we're not getting Conor McGregor versus Jorge Masvidal.
Kind of feels like this is the one that has the most amount of heat attached to it, right?
Well, it's funny because earlier today, Masvidal, we posted a quote on the ESPN MMA Twitter and Instagram. Masvidal talking about some quick mathematics that he did regarding Conor McGregor. And then we get this fight with this dust up with Kamaru Usman. Masvidal, much like Conor McGregor, seems to be keeping his options open, and he is definitely not letting the pot that's boiling with Usman let up. So I'd be interested in either, but good for Masvidal. He deserves this attention, and it seems like he's going to get something at the end of this.
Okay, so I will answer that review question that TST posed before we had the breaking news segment there, but I feel like you have some work to do with your job with this stuff coming out, so I will let you go, New York Rick. You've been great.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. And much love. If you need me to hook you up, let me know. It's $10 a pop, and we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye, my friend.
All right, so there's New York Rick. TST, Can you remind me of the question? We're just going to do this live. I don't care. This is the magic of it. See, in your mind, I know you're thinking like, wait, why are we doing this like this? Why don't we just edit it, right? Like, why don't we just clean this up? That's the beauty of taping site. I want to do this live. I want people to know that in the middle of this show, as you're reading me that review, I told you to call Jorge Masvidal, right or wrong?
I mean, I know that's what we'll end up doing, but TST would prefer to just lead off with Jorge and, you know, blow that up. But hey, whatever you want. So the review was, and the question within the review was basically, hey, let's not crown Khabib the best in the world because we haven't put him in the welterweight division. He would lose if he were put in the welterweight division.
I don't know how you can actually say that. I mean, I think that the guy is the most dominant fighter in the history of the sport, 28-0. Has only lost one round. People can't say that. Like, no one has ever had a start to a career like that. No one has fought on the level that he fought and been that dominant for that long. No one has gone that long without losing a round. The one round, of course, was to Conor McGregor, round three of their fight in October of 2018. So how could you say confidently that if he goes up to 170, he would lose? How could you say that? Now, the fact that he's not actively going up to 170 is fine. He's the man at 155. What does he need to go to 170 for? So feels like a bit of a flawed argument if you're asking me, and I don't think that that should be a knock on him in the pound-for-pound rankings. The pound-for-pound rankings is all about, all right, if everyone was the same weight, the heavyweights to the flyweights, who would be the man? Now, if someone does go up and down, does that give us more insight as to how they would do, and does that get them some extra points? Absolutely. But if someone doesn't, like GSP for the longest time didn't go up, John Jones has not gone up, right? A bunch of people haven't gone up. But does DC get more points for going up, in my opinion? Yeah, or going down, whichever way you look at it? Absolutely. But I don't think it should be a detriment. I don't think it should be like a knock on the guy. So I don't necessarily agree with that.
I just want to see someone fight Colby Covington. I don't know who it's going to be. If Khabib wants to move up and lose to Colby, I would welcome that so that Colby can make his undefeated streak go away.
Okay, and on that note,
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Okay, Ariel, so in the spirit of everything that has happened over the last few days, and I know you had referenced this, that Jay Williams video that was circulating after Kobe, very emotional, very powerful, basically whatever you have going on with the person in your life, whatever beef you have, whatever little petty battle you're fighting, that you just have to let it go. And I want to tie in here is that a problem that I've faced with the people that are close in my life is that I always make time for people. I always make time for people, the people that are really important to me. And sometimes I feel like that's not reciprocated. It's always like, oh, I'm too busy. Sorry. You know, we'll talk next week. And then that just keeps happening over and over again. So what I just want to say to everyone is that, listen, if we haven't learned anything over the last few days, what we have learned is that life is fleeting. You never know what's going to happen the next day. And I know that's very morbid, but it's just very real. And so those people that are important in your life, like, stop putting it off. Make time for them. I know we are all busy. I know we all think we have super important things to do. But at the end of the day, I call it the spinning rock theory. At the end of the day, we're all just these little creatures that are going around and around on a spinning rock for eternity. It's really not that important. So while you are on this earth, make time for the people that are important for you. All the other obligations that you supposedly have that you think are important, at the end of the day, they're really not. And I know, Ariel, that may sound weird to you because I know you're such a grinder and you really, really value what it is you do. But at the end of the day, it's family. It's the people. That's what we all should want to be remembered for, right?
Amen. Well said. 100%. Like yesterday hearing Shaquille O'Neal say that, I'm going to be saying I love you more to you know, the colleagues on NBA, inside the NBA, NBA on TNT. Like, that just, you know, and the thing is, we say this a lot, right? We always say this sort of thing. I'm going to appreciate life more. I'm going to hug my loved ones. I'm going to tell them I love them. And then a week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and it's back to normal. And so it would be nice if we did it more. It would be nice if we remembered to do these things more, if we appreciated people more, if we lived in the moment more, if we didn't sweat the small stuff as much as we usually do, and if we don't take these things so seriously, these trivial things that can go away in an instant. And at the end of the day, respect our family and our parents and our brothers and sisters and our loved ones and our friends and our colleagues. Life would be a lot better. And it has been really nice to see so much positivity when there's so much negativity online. I wish it wasn't, coming as a result of what happened on Sunday. I would never want that in a million years, but that's been, I guess, the one small, nice byproduct, that thread that L. Duncan has, inspired, the girl dad threads of all the dads with their daughters and things like that. These are beautiful things. I wish it wasn't at the expense of these lives. But I do hope that we can be better people. And honestly, being at ESPN today and being at ESPN Monday, especially, like, I just kind of feel, and these are my interactions with people, I do feel like, you know, we are hit by it because we work in sports, we live and breathe sports. I do feel like people are a little kinder to each other and a little nicer and a little more compassionate. I don't know if that's going to last, but, you know, to your point, I agree with the sentiment. I hope it does remain. I hope it does last. I hope that's, you know, it's been an ugly couple of years in our world, and things happen and will continue to happen. But I do hope that we are kinder and remind everyone to appreciate life and appreciate each other and love each other and tell people how you feel about them. And so in the spirit of that, I love you, TST, and I love you, New York Rick. And you guys are a big part of my lives, and I appreciate everything that you do for me.
I was hoping you would say that. I love you too, Ariel, and I love mixed martial arts.
Thank you. That should be your T-shirt. TST T-shirt. I love mixed martial arts.
With Colby Covington and Israel Adesanya on the back.
Wow, look at that. Look at that pronunciation. You've come a long way, my
best.
Man. You've come a long way.
I was looking at the rankings that some of you guys put together, the 30 through 21 rankings that came out. And I was like, wow, I know every single name on this list. I never would have known this a year ago.
Wow. So if you knew, and I suggest checking it out, ESPN.com/MMA. If you know all those names, you will definitely know 1 through 20.
For sure.
My guess.
I can't wait to see it.
And I can't wait to hear what you think of. I wonder, I don't even know where Colby fell, if he did fall anywhere.
Wasn't in 30 through 21.
Wow. That's going to be really interesting. Tomorrow, the 11 through 20 ranking comes out, and then 1 through 10 on Friday. Cool little concept. Check that out right now, ESPN.com/MMA. Also, later today, check out Ariel the Bad Guy on ESPN Plus. Chael's in Miami. How about that? So we did it from there. Anyway, we are out of time. What a show. Wow, geez. So many angles. So much to digest. Thank you very much, Stephen A. Smith, for coming on. That was tremendous. He's the man. Love talking to him. And I hope that he opened your eyes and ears a little more after that conversation. Thank you, as always, to New York Rick. Appreciate his time. And, of course, thank you to Jorge Masvidal for the late appearance there. Crazy stuff in Miami. For now, though, we are out of time. Thank you to all of you for listening, subscribing, downloading, commenting, reviewing, all that stuff and more. I appreciate you. I love you. And I'll talk to you next week.